CBSI in the World, I'm John Batchelor. Supply chain, much in the news these last years because of inflation, recovery from the pandemic. But now, the Chinese spy balloon and supply chain, the headlines from CNBC. The U.S.-China spy balloon tensions are drifting into politics of the supply chain. Gordon Chang, at Gordon G. Chang, my colleague and co-host, and we welcome Alan Tonnelson, our guru on manufacturing and supply chain matters these last years. Alan blogs at Reality Check. Alan, the explanation here is that leading trade associations and their member companies are watching the tensions because they need to diversify manufacturing to supply chains. It's a puzzle to me how this all fits together. Can you help me understand this? Good evening to you.
Hi, John, and hi, Gordon. I have to say that my first reaction to that CNBC story was actually a possibly too cynical duh, because nothing could have been more obvious over the last few years than that U.S.-China relations have been worsening, largely because of China's increasingly aggressive actions toward Taiwan, toward the rest of the South China Sea area, toward various other trade partners with its so-called wolf warrior diplomacy, threatening sanctions for every perceived slight. So it's certainly good that major trade association heads have been telling their members that they really need to take this whole supply chain diversification issue much more seriously. And if the China spy balloon incident has dramatized that even further in their eyes, well, that's good too. But certainly there's been no shortage of evidence over the last few years, once again, that doing business with China is an increasingly risky proposition.
Gordon, just a general question about the supply chain and reshoring, friendshoring, in some fashion, changing the complete dependence on China for supplies. Is that conversation still new to the manufacturers, Gordon? Or is there hesitation because of bottom line thinking?
I don't think the conversation is new, but yes, there is hesitation because of the bottom line. However, people are starting to see that these tensions are rising so fast and that there are good alternatives like Mexico. So you're starting to see, I think, a real migration to places like Mexico and even places like India. So this is going to be an important trend, and China is driving it. China is actually pushing companies out of their own country.
You have a question for Alan.
Alan, let's talk about Mexico for a moment, because it's one of the three countries in the USMCA agreement. Do you see Mexico as a viable alternative to China, or are we just witnessing a lot of publicity in the last several months?
I certainly see Mexico as an increasingly attractive and increasingly viable alternative to China. And the same goes for the countries of Central America and the Caribbean Basin. And one big reason is because they signed a preferential trade agreement with the United States back in 2006. And much more important than the fact that I see these countries as viable alternatives to China, but U.S.-based manufacturers clearly see them as increasingly viable alternatives too. And how do I know this? Because the latest official U.S. trade figures that we just got, which cover the full year 2022, show that since 2019, the last pre-pandemic year that we've got data for, there has been a major shift in U.S. two-way trade from China to the Western Hemisphere. And in fact, that actually belies some of the statements in that CNBC story by manufacturing trade group representatives that it's in fact it's been the countries of East Asia who have been the main winners in this exodus from China. That's certainly true to some extent, especially when we're talking about Vietnam. But the Western Hemisphere countries have been big winners too, and that's really good news for the U.S. economy and for supply chain security, because after all, they're so much closer and so much less riskier. I should say less risky.
Gordon, the puzzle again for me. Alan's statistics are helpful here. The puzzle again for me is, what is the argument not to move out of China? What do they bring forward, Gordon? I approve if they're saying profit, but what else do they say?
I think because some of these companies do have established relationship with Chinese factories, and those are hard to break, especially if there are suppliers close by. There's also a certain amount of momentum in this, in inertia, I should say, and that is a big factor. China still can be cheaper on some things, and the big box stores, for instance, are firmly committed to China. Although I think that they are starting to see that they need to have a second source of supply.
Alan, the puzzle then, the box stores, let's talk about them. That would be Amazon, the virtual box store, Walmart's the real box store, and other chains. Do you hear a conversation reaching into their leadership saying, listen, this isn't going well if we have to start explaining to our public that things made in China are contributing to your fears?
I've certainly seen news reports to that effect. And the fact that, in particular, the Central American countries have been capturing more U.S. trade than in terms of the increase than China has, tells me that there has been some fairly substantial shift in the production of consumer goods, because they tend to be more labor intensive. They tend to be less sophisticated and less difficult to produce. And therefore, countries like those in Central America, whose manufacturing bases are still at a pretty fundamental or a pretty elementary stage, they are certainly more ready for consumer goods manufacturing than they are for the production of higher value goods. Now, Mexico is much more advanced than the Central American countries when it comes to that more capital and more technology intensive manufacturing. Still hasn't quite caught up to China, but it's making rapid progress. And it's also been, again, a big winner when it comes to who gets most of the of America's export-oriented manufacturing. Mexico is coming up very fast.
Gordon, when I turn over a product from Amazon and it says made in China, I wince a little bit. Is that something you've heard from other people, Gordon?
Yes. I mean, Lydia and I, for instance, we go to great lengths to buy something not made in China. So, for instance, we were looking at electric razors and we wanted to buy a Braun, but it was made in China. So eventually, Lydia found a company making electric razors in the U.S., and it is actually quite good, as good as Braun, though it's a little bit more expensive.
Do you have a question for Alan? We have about a minute.
Alan, you referred to CAFTA-DR, that free trade agreement. How can we improve that in order to encourage companies to move to Central America?
We can improve that Central America trade agreement and the USMCA, the U.S. trade agreement that includes Mexico, very substantially by increasing the tariff penalties that companies need to pay if the products that they make in those two areas that are headed for the U.S. market don't include the required amount of local content. That is, if they're not substantially made from North American parts, components, materials, et cetera. In the USMCA, former President Trump made some progress along these lines, but not nearly enough.
Alan Tonelson, independent economic policy analyst. He blogs at Reality Check. Gordon Chang at Gordon G. Chang. I'm John Nash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor,